He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And as summer rolls on, we have new arrivals at Jeep dealerships in the form of the Grand Cherokee L, which I have inspected on a couple of dealers' lots. I have not seen any on the road yet, but I will tell you that it will be hard to spot quickly because of the front grille looking like so many other Jeeps, which is what Jeep wants you to think. However, I have only seen them in black and white. And all three that I've noticed have had black interiors. I find that very boring. I found the colors very boring. I noted on television advance ads for them that they had reds and blues and all these other exciting colors with nice caramel interiors and the like, which are obviously going to be available in the more expensive versions. But they are packed full of all the technology. I believe the stickers on each of them start out around $43,000 to $45,000, and the stickers with all the options that were in the ones I saw in the lots were running around $53,000. We'll see whether they're going to be a hit or not. I predicted when they first noticed, Jeep first mentioned that they were going to bring this vehicle on stream because it's a three-row version of. It's a new style, so it's a three-row version of the Jeep Grand Cherokee, and they call it the Grand Cherokee L, or the Wagoneer L, I'm not sure which, doesn't matter. It's the biggest Jeep on the road thus far. I think it will sell well. I don't know how the dealers are going to market it. I don't know what training. I suspect the Jeep owners of Jeep vehicles will know a lot more about them than the salespeople will at the first glance. Welcome to that vehicle in the Jeep lineup. I also have noted that apparently Cherokees, which is my popular favorite in the Jeep lineup, have started to trickle back into lots. I saw two at a Jeep dealership over this last weekend that had not been there before, and they have been long absent from several Jeep dealerships I've been visiting over the last month and a half or more. And that is because Jeep stopped production completely at the Jeep Cherokee plant, wherever it is, for some weeks. All related to, of course, the usual explanation of chip shortages, where they reroute chips to the vehicles that they really want to get out onto the market, which was, of course, the new Grand Cherokee L. With that in mind, let's go to a couple other things.
Well, can I chime in?
Go ahead.
As far as chip shortages are concerned, yes, they are still in very short supply. And to that effect, Ford has, and I don't know if they followed through with that, but there was they put it out there that they would start delivering vehicles to dealerships, unfinished vehicles, if you will, and leave the install of the chips, the missing chips, to the dealers. And I just can't help but think, oh, what a nightmare in the making, both from a logistical standpoint and a liability standpoint down the line. So now you may start seeing Fords on lots, and other manufacturers may follow with that, that are not ready for delivery. So...
The bottom line is,
if you don't need to buy a vehicle now, don't try and go and buy one because the supply is limited, and you might not get what you're looking for. So, I know it's a catch-22. Older vehicles need to be repaired, and shops are swamped, and some parts are in low supply as well. So, I don't know. Maybe drive less. People are driving pretty erratically this summer. I think insurance companies have come out with numbers saying that claims are up, crashes are up for 2021. And quite frankly, when I see how people drive on the mass bike, I'm not really surprised. So,
Okay. Well, I'll chime in on the chip shortage. General Motors had the same issue with their pickup trucks months ago.
Yep.
And they were delivering trucks without chips, too. The fact of the matter is, yes, I agree with Jay saying if you don't need to try and buy a vehicle that may be on a dealer's lot without the noted chips already installed, I would probably agree don't try to buy it. However, they are not going to be difficult to replace, I don't think, apparently, or they wouldn't deliver them to the dealers to do so. You have to remember that all vehicles come with warranties. I think where warranty problems come in are going to involve chip failures at some point during the course of ownership. And they're not going to require you that the dealers send the vehicles back to the manufacturer to install chips. So I'm not worried about that part of it. Yes, I think that delivering vehicles incompletely assembled is not really a smart thing. However, they have been producing the vehicles, and they run out of space on their parking lots, I think, which has caused this situation to be happening. A couple of recalls are of note. Older Explorers, and I can't give you the age range right this minute, have got a recall going on, which is actually quite a dangerous safety recall because it has to do with vehicle control if the recall, which involves something to do with the suspension, fails on the Explorers. I already notified a real estate client of mine who has one such vehicle, and he knew nothing about it because, of course, the recall is not going to be notifying the owners until August 15th. But it has to do with a potential failure of a part in the suspension, which would cause the vehicle to possibly go out of control. I think the out-of-control part is something that when an owner doesn't know anything about how the vehicle handles in the first place, and something happens like, well, a blowout tire or something like that, a vehicle will tend to swerve in certain instances, and an owner who may or may not be really a great driver may not know quite what to do. In my opinion on this recall situation, my opinion is if the vehicle was swaying or something strange to the owner, they should hold on to the steering wheel because apparently it's a rear end of the vehicle problem. You hold on to the wheel and try to make sure that you keep the wheel going straight down the road or just steering it quietly, gently off to the side until you come to a stop. I don't think it's going to happen to a lot of vehicles, but it is something that's worth noting. The other recall has to do with the Chevy Bolt. Jay and I have discussed this. There's apparently a problem with certain modules, charging modules and certain batteries. Apparently there are three different manufacturers or suppliers of batteries to the Volt. And Bolt, B-O-L-T, not Volt. They've caused a couple of fires in instances with the batteries apparently overheating. And we had this problem on airlines, you know, way back. But battery fires are dangerous. And lithium batteries are apparently prone to overheating if they're not charged properly. There are charging modules and all sorts of computer programs to try to alleviate this problem, which are out there, but Bolt's 67,000, I think, are due for a second or third recall because this problem has been out before, and apparently the first fix did not work.
So
Jay, do you have some things?
Speaking of the Bolt, actually a couple
sales
of
weeks
up prices of both the 2021 Bolt, which has been in production since 2017, and the 2022 Bolt, which is mechanically very similar, but the design is totally refreshed and much more in line with what you'd expect from futuristic electric vehicles, and probably the shape of things to come from GM in the EV world. But it was interesting that a pretty local dealership here had both the 2021 and 2022 on lots, and you can get a screamer deal. And I keep saying this on 2021 Chevy Bolts, and I think that's going to continue to be the case. Yes, they look a little dorky, especially compared to the new one. But if you know, if you're looking for the best bang for the buck, I still think that that is one way to go in the EV world. And let's keep in mind that people are gambling on a future tax credit to come out sometime this year. But, you know, that's in the hands of politicians.
I would not gamble on waiting for that, but
especially if you need a car now and you want a Bolt
or another electric vehicle that the tax credits may have evaporated on. On the Bolt, Jay's right. The new 2022 design is more rounded, I think, Jay, would you say, or slimmer? I'm not sure.
It's a little more rounded. It's a little more, you know, cleaner lines, but, you know, definitely modern lines. The current, you know, 2017, 2021 is arguably a bit dorky.
But I think its interior is more practical.
So, it's a vehicle to put on the list, nevertheless.
Yeah. Sales are way up on Bolts. You say you can get screaming deals. I'm not sure whether that's across the dealership line or just in the dealership. I know you've talked about screaming deals on Bolts before, and this is a year-old situation.
Yep,
but Bolts, if their sales are way up, I don't think they're all going at screaming deals, but it's good to note that finally the Bolt is taking hold because, you and I both drove it, and we liked it way back, and I think that was like 3 years ago.
Yes, it was.
And we thought it was a very good vehicle, and it's a nice size. It's equivalent to the Honda. Honda's got a vehicle in the same size line and all that, but it gets reasonably good range, I believe, 236 or more miles per charge, and so good for the Bolt. But electric sales are way up anyways. Jay, you've probably looked at some charts. Tesla's falling off a little bit in a couple of their lines, whereas the Cayman,
Taycan.
Tesla sales are screaming.
I know that Tesla's having production issues launching the new Model S, and so it's the X and something else
that's falling off from the top five. So Tesla's lost two of the top five positions of electric vehicles, and those aren't new models. But electric vehicles are taking hold. I think in Europe, they are really taking hold, and Jay may be able to tell us more in a minute when I stop talking. But they're taking hold in America, too, I think. So what I want to ask Jay on this show and anybody else who wants to listen is, I've watching pickup trucks pulling campers all across America, or let's say all across the Northeast. And what I want to know with these electric pickups coming on, is it going to make them impossible to drag a camper around the country?
Jay, do you have any thoughts? I really don't think so because, you know, we say that the range is going to drop drastically. Well, yeah, well, guess what? When you tow, you know, your gas-guzzling pickup truck, internal combustion engine pickup trucks that we know now, already get poor gas mileage, getting the 15 miles to the gallon on a good day. And when they're towing these humongous trailers, believe me, those gas mileages are falling below 10.
Single digits,
exactly.
Yeah. So however,
your range is going down in a gas powered pickup truck as well.
Okay, Jay, I go back to it takes 10 minutes to fill up or 15 minutes to fill up a 35 gallon pickup truck tank, which is what comes if you get the big tanks on the pickup trucks. So even at 6 miles per gallon or 8 miles per gallon, you're up in the close to the 200-mile range before you have to worry about that. I can't see an electric pickup truck pulling a 6,500-pound or even, I don't know what these trailers weigh, for 200 miles before the charge is down, when they're probably going to get 300 miles empty. But that's my comment on electric pickup trucks trying to do real heavy-duty pulling work versus gasoline.
Well, I think it's a moot point. I mean, it's not a moot point, but I think it's the same point we go over and over. Yes, it takes time to charge an electric vehicle. You know what? When you stop, usually people do more than just put gas. They use restrooms. They go in a store. They buy food. And your pit stop usually is more than just the 7 minutes.
But if
you're
not going
to camper, you're really on vacation and you're not really in a hurry to get anywhere. So just go in your camper and relax.
Okay, Jay. I don't think the listeners will agree with you to that degree, but we can move on. You can take over for now.
So I was in Europe for a couple of weeks as I try to go on a regular basis and finally was able to do so. It's always interesting for me, the driving experience over there versus here. It's very different, you know, more congestion, much smaller cars, mostly, I'm going to say, faster traffic on small roads, but also, and I was, this time around, I only went to Belgium, which is a small country, pretty much right smack in the center of Western Europe, I also hate to say that I am becoming a true believer in speed cameras and scanners. I just think it's the way way to slow down traffic. It works. They do that on big axis, highways getting into cities. They will put scanners and spread them by a mile or two, and then just calculate your average speed on that section of the road. And if you're if your average speed is above the speed limit, well, you're getting ticketed. So it brings the whole mass of traffic to an equal speed, and it just makes things so much more relaxing. Nobody's trying to pass the other guy or get an edge. And yes, it seems slow a lot of times, but it actually works. And cops can actually do their job and be on the road patrolling people for other possible violations, but not just sitting on the side of the road and shooting radar guns. But that, that's my view on both traffic and how we police traffic. And to that point, I was on the Mass Pike yesterday. I went to Boston on a Sunday afternoon, over and back. And as we know, for those of us who travel that route quite a bit, a Sunday afternoon is not necessarily a good place to be on the intersections of I-90 and 495. Actually, I was I encountered two state troopers who almost created crashes, and one was with me. Another one just passed a whole bunch of traffic, slammed on the brakes, and got off on an exit. And it's just anyway. I know I'm going on a rant. We also encountered very bad weather conditions, and I don't have a real answer to what to do when the rain really comes down really hard. I don't think pulling over on the side of the road is necessarily a good idea. I think putting your flashers on is a very disturbing idea because it really creates even more visibility issues. I think traveling in two lanes of traffic is absurd. I think in those conditions we have to come to single lane traveling and really bring the speed down, but try to keep moving and try to keep as much distance as possible with the vehicle in front. And still be able to see their taillights. And same, other weather conditions like sandstorms. I just read this morning, waking up, a huge crash. I think it was in Utah yesterday. Sandstorm on the interstate, and there was a 20 vehicle pileup, and seven people died. Those are circumstances that are, difficult. And there is less things we can do as drivers, but most of the time we can avoid getting into bad situations just by being smarter on the road and more attentive.
I would agree, Jay. I disagree about the flashers' use. I think flashers are. I was in the same weather conditions you were, but I was on I-95 in both Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut, and we hit some storms. And the biggest problem I think what flashes do is it gets your attention, your eye attention, as to something happening before necessarily the brake light application does.
So
I don't think you should run around. Once you've got the traffic behind you slowed to your pace, if you're trying to be sure that you're not rear-ended, which is why when I use my flashers to do it, I turn the flashers off because by that time the whole line is going at the speed that you have been slowed down to if you have come up behind a row of traffic.
I agree with you there. I think the use of flashers, if I'm in any kind of traffic situations where traffic comes to either a stop or really a major slowdown, I will use my flashers for the time that the car in back of me or the cars in back of me are going to realize that something is happening in front. And then I turn them off. The problem with flashers remaining on, like in a rainstorm, is that it really blinds you, and you have this on and off light, and it just makes it difficult to see. What I do miss, and speaking of what we have in Europe and we don't have here, is the rear fog lights that you still find on mostly high-end German
Porsches, cars. Audis, Mercedes, BMWs.
And the problem is here that people forget to turn them off and don't know that they're on. They're very powerful lights.
Talk about a blinding situation. That is exactly it. My 2001 A8 Audi has those rear lights, and you know what they do? They default when you turn the ignition off, so people don't have them come on when they get back in the car.
And that's the way they
I don't know why people don't know that their rear lights are on, but they don't if they don't default to off after you've turned the ignition off. And those are the European cars, too, some of them.
People and lights is a problem altogether, right? I mean, half the people don't know what daytime running lights are versus lights on all four corners.
Well, and
of
half the people don't use their flashers when they're parked on the side of the road either.
Right, and therefore people who know when flashers are supposed to be used, it's like suddenly speaking a different language, which is actually the point of the flashers during driving, and you need to know when that's happening because otherwise, what do? Think that the person has stopped forever?
Right.
That was the only thing that I wanted to weigh in on as far as by the side of the road, because you have to know, you have to adjudicate. If that car with flashers is moving, then you better not treat it like it's you're suddenly on a shoulder. That's what I'm saying.
Correct. And yesterday in that rainstorm, I had cars with flashers in back of me who were insisting on getting by me. There's no standard of what to do, and I understand that. And it's just, I think what we have to do is just try to be reasonable. Be aware of what lights we have on, what we're using, and again, it's all about awareness and situational awareness and knowing your vehicle and
where the controls are to turn them on and off.
Yes, which I was driving a car yesterday that had the rear fog light and those powerful lights. And it wasn't until I got out of the rainstorm that I figured out how to turn them on. But that's a whole other story. That's back to my previous point of knowing, the controls of your car.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.